NHPR.com. I'm Rick Anley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. States and no winners is how the authors of a new study on corruption in state government summarize their findings. The study comes from the State Integrity Investigation, a project of the Center for Public Integrity, Global Integrity, and Public Radio International. Its focus is the laws and practices which it says make it easier for corruption to occur. The report grades states based on systems in place to combat corruption, anything from public access to government information to lobbying disclosure rules. But since this corruption risk report card was released, it's been sharply criticized. Some states with less than squeaky clean reputations scored near the top. For example, New Jersey, Louisiana, and Illinois. Meanwhile, states you might think would rank better, like New Hampshire or South Dakota, were near the back of the pack. Critics say that's because the measures used to come up with the grades are highly subject to opinion and that they ignore local political culture. But the report's authors say some of those states with a more corrupt reputation have learned their lessons and have built up those systems to combat misdeeds, while other smaller, more humble states have a risk of corruption simply because they haven't put those procedures into place. And that's an argument some in New Hampshire agree with. Today in The Exchange, the Granite State grapples with integrity. Let's hear from you. How do you think our state is doing in terms of government integrity? In what areas are we doing well or not so well? Does our unique system of governance help or hurt the cause of open and honest government? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org, or you can also post your comments on our Facebook page. We have three guests. With us is John Greenberg, former executive editor at NHPR, who helped conduct research for the State Integrity Investigation as part of this broader project. And John, it's great to see you. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Also with us, Grant Bossy, investigative reporter at the Josiah Bartlett Center for Public Policy. And Grant, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Thank you very much.
And David Hess, longtime Republican state representative from Hooksett, a member of the Ways and Means Committee. And Representative Hess, welcome back.
Always a pleasure, Laura.
Well, I want to spend a couple minutes with you, John, first, just to kind of tell people what we're really talking about here. Define corruption risk. It's not quite the same as corruption.
No, it definitely is not. And I mean, I think that you hit on the nature of this whole project really well in your introduction, because it's a formal analysis. It is taking a look at many different areas, more than a dozen, where you can say, do you have the laws in place that say you've got investigatory capability? Do you have the laws in place that say, if you're a lawmaker, you can't accept a gift? It is very detailed. It is very formal. The emphasis is on what is written in law and what is done in practice. And whereas there certainly is room for discussion about whether certain things are scored a 50 or a 25 or what have you, I think that at the very least, the entire approach lays out what the rubric is. What are the yardsticks that you're applying? And it's saying, let us compare all 50 states.
Well, and right. And there's been some critique, as I said, but it has opened up a big discussion about what does it mean to have an open government where people can get the information they need and where they can feel confident that the government is working for them and not insiders.
And I actually think the greater thrust of this report has to do with broad public mistrust of government. And the way I interpret this is to look at it as, are there measures that any state, New Hampshire in particular, might put in place that would actually promote trust? And I think that if you look at it that way, rather than simply as a scorecard, you're probably getting closer to what I would think of as the intent of the entire project.
Okay, and we won't get fixated on the grades, John, this hour, but I did want to ask about them. There are some weird results, if I could use that word. Illinois, Louisiana, New Jersey rank better than New Hampshire. These are states that routinely make headlines for, you know, putting public officials in the slammer and all sorts of, well, less than tasty details.
Yeah, and as we, as members of the news-consuming public, we love them for it. But I think that the way to look at this is that if you have a problem, then you're more likely to generate the political will to pass some legislation and create some, offices of integrity and whatnot to actually do your investigations. And then you're more likely to find some stuff. I would say that here in New Hampshire, I fall on the side of saying there's more that we ought to be doing in terms of transparency. But I also believe that there's a complicated mix of social conventions, political traditions that actually I'm kind of ready to believe that we're not a high corruption state, that it's not like, you know, this iceberg where we barely see the tip and there's all this horrible stuff below the surface. I don't think that's the reality.
Well, Grant Bossy and David Hess, I want to bring you into this too. And Grant, as I said, you know, you're an investigator for the Josiah Bartlett Center for Public Policy. You're always looking into what government is doing. What do you think about this project and what it's trying to say?
Yeah, I think it has some very valid points to make. I mean, I envy my colleagues in other states that get to write about, you know, their public officials going to jail. And we don't see a lot of that in New Hampshire. And when we do, it's exceptional. But this report highlights the potential for corruption, not necessarily actual corruption, the institutional capability to address something that's going on. And in New Hampshire, I don't think we have very much corruption at all in terms of, you know, people aren't taking bribes. People aren't, giving their brother-in-law a no-show job at the DOT. But there is a lot of what I call soft corruption. And it's nobody's trying to do anything wrong. Nobody's trying to rip anybody off. But Joe's had that contract for 10 years and he's doing a great job. So we don't need to put it out to bid, or he's a little higher, but he's a New Hampshire company and we know him and he's doing a great job and his wife's a state rep and everybody's just fine with everything. So nobody has a problem with greasing the wheels because, you know, we know him up in Concord. And that happens a lot in the legislature. And the New Hampshire legislature is particularly ill-equipped to deal with that sort of soft corruption. I know we're going to hear from the Ethics Committee, because the Ethics Committee is so insular and can't share any of the information that goes on with the public. And you don't have any accountability for that soft corruption that goes on. There's no way for the public to say, wait a second, why is Joe getting that contract? Why wasn't it put out to bid? And did some state rep call the governor when he shouldn't have?
Well, and transparency, public right to know, public access to information, Grant, is a big part of the critique of not just our state, but almost every state in this report. As somebody who likes to dig into these records, how easy is it?
It's hard and long, and it depends on the agency you ask. And we got an F in access to information. And I don't think we're an F state. I think we're maybe a C-minus state because we have a very strong right-to-know law. It's 91A is the shorthand for it. And it basically says if there's a public record, you can get it. What it doesn't say is how quickly the agency has to get it to you. People can get overcharged. There are agencies still charging 25 cents a page for something that can be emailed for free. There are lots of hurdles that can be put in the way of the right to know law. But on paper, at least, we've got a great law. In practice, it really depends on how well that government agency wants to comply with the law. And it can be a huge hurdle. In groups like mine, we took 2 years to get information from the state about all its spending.
Well, and David Hess, legislature's kind of on the hot seat here, and you've been in the legislature for a long time. What do you think about this D grade that New Hampshire got and some of the critiques that Grant and John have put on the table?
Well, first of all, I think the major problem here is the use of the word corruption. The word corruption automatically generates a public perception that corruption is, in fact, occurring. And I take strong exception to Grant's phrase of, quote, soft corruption, close quote. I don't believe that's happening at all in New Hampshire. Corruption should not be part of this study. It shouldn't be the title of this study. If you want to talk about integrity or checks on integrity, do so, but don't call it corruption.
I think they call it risk of corruption. Not that New Hampshire is corrupt, but that because it doesn't have solid policies and procedures in place.
Let me finish, please.
I know it's called integrity.
John, you spoke for 5 minutes.
Okay.
you know, the public sees corruption and risk of corruption, yes. But that's one of the problems with this study. It is so sophisticated. It is so intellectual that it doesn't address the issues in a straightforward, forthright way that people understand it. For example, yesterday in the Wall Street Journal, there was an op-ed piece by two folks from the Institute for Justice in Washington, which is titled, studying this study, New Jersey Least Corrupt? Ha-ha. And I think that sums up what the general public at large is going to say. And so to start out the debate by saying we're talking about corruption or risk of corruption totally misses the point.
David, what about Grant's idea that, you know, there's not huge – no, nobody's, you know, giving their brother-in-law a do-nothing ghost job at the Department of Transportation. But there is some question about, for example, whether a state senator who works for the insurance industry – should be in charge of crafting rules governing the insurance industry?
Well, I think you have a situation that is unique in New Hampshire in the sense that we have a citizen legislature. No place else in the state has a legislature composed of 424 people. No place in the country has a legislature in which they only make $100 a year. So unless you're retired or out of the economic workforce as a house person, you are gainfully employed someplace or another, and I always remind people 400 people is what you use to do a poll nationwide that is within 3% plus or minus of national sentiment. So you're always going to have these conflicts with people because they're working folks. I do think and for that reason, I think disclosure is much more important in New Hampshire than disqualification, because once you have disqualification, you deprive your constituents of their right to speak on the issue.
And I know both of you gentlemen want to jump in, but I want to ask David Hess one more question. How well do we do on that disclosure?
It's a mixed bag. I practiced law for 37 years while I was in the legislature and before. And lawyers are very sensitive to conflicts of interest because we have to face that issue in court with clients, et cetera, all the time. I think by and large, lawyers would file article Rule 16 disclosure forms. Other professionals or other people probably are less sensitive to that issue, and I think Roy White mentioned that or he was quoted as saying that in an article in the Union Leader recently.
Senator White, who works in the insurance industry.
Senator White, yeah. So I think there needs to be increased awareness.
Okay, and Representative Hess, I'm going to cut you off there. I do apologize, and we'll be back after a short break.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members. Support also comes to us from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And Hypertherm, an employee-owned company that designs and manufactures advanced metal cutting systems here in New Hampshire. Online at hypertherm.com. More on a new study giving New Hampshire low marks in what it calls integrity in state government on the exchange on NHPR and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, lotteries, and state revenue. New Hampshire weather today, partly to mostly sunny with high temperatures around 45 for the North Country, 50 to 55 for the rest of the state. Clear and chilly tonight, lows near 20 in northern sections of the state, 25 to 30 for the rest of New Hampshire. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and breezy with high temperatures from 45 north, ranging to 55 in the south. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a new report says New Hampshire has some work to do when it comes to preventing future corruption in state government. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. How do you think our state is doing in terms of government integrity, a system of government that people believe is honest and open? In what areas do you think we're doing well? Where do you think we're not doing so well? Our number again on The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook, so we hope you go to our page, join the conversation there. With us now on the phone from D.C. is Bill Buesenberg, Executive Director of the Center for Public Integrity, an investigative news organization based in Washington, one of several groups involved in this report on integrity in state government that we're talking about. And Bill, real nice to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Laura.
Well, you've heard the critiques, Bill, no doubt, of this assessment of corruption risk, that the grades are based on the absence of certain laws or procedures, which critics say may or may not really influence the actual level of corruption in a particular state. So clear that up for us, Bill. What are we really talking about here? Are we talking about actual corruption or risk of corruption?
No, we've never said this is about how corrupt every state is or not. We're saying this is about the risk of corruption. And it does have an impact. When you have a state, I'll just take Virginia, that has really bad disclosure laws and all kinds of money can flow without anybody being aware of it or knowing about it. Citizens are in the dark about a lot of things, and Virginia does some strange things based on that. Is that all corruption? Well, that's for other people to look at. Yes, there have been arrests, and yes, there have been actions taken. But our look at it is at the laws of Virginia, for example, to show what is that risk. And I think they are at greater risk, and they got an F in our survey in this study. And as you know, New Hampshire got a D in it, did slightly better, but still has some challenges. And I think it's wise to point these out. I will say that this is a very serious study. It went through 330 different indicators for every state. There's something like 16,500 data points involved. It involved reporters, as you know, in every state doing this work. We worked with, just to give you a quick survey, we worked with the Global Integrity, which is a group that's been working for 10 years internationally, and they've been doing a corruption risk index for the world, which has been very successful and has led to a lot of changes around the world, where other countries actually are implementing rules for transparency and accountability that are in some cases better than we have in this country. So I think this is a serious survey. I'm really happy with what we came up with and glad to be talking about it.
Well, so, okay, as you look at the risk of corruption, Bill, and laws that you feel would help avert it, how do you feel about the critique, I think that was just made in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, that there's no hard evidence that these laws, be it campaign finance disclosures or gift rules or whatever, there's no hard evidence that they actually help avert corruption. They make us feel good, but we're not really sure if they work. What do you think?
Well, I can give you one example. For 10 years, we've been taking one integrity indicator that had to do with disclosure of financial conflicts of interest by members of the state legislatures. Okay, we've been doing that and repeating it every few years. 24 states have changed their laws based on this because there were so many F states that didn't have good rules. Louisiana was one of those states. They got an F on their disclosure rules. The new governor came in, Bobby Jindal, and he came to us and he said, what will we need to do to get a higher grade from the center? And we said, well, look at Washington State. Washington State has the best laws in the country about disclosure of conflicts of interest by members of their legislature. So Louisiana, in fact, did pass the laws, the same laws as Washington State. They now get an A in that area from the Center for Public Integrity. And what we've heard from the Times-Picayune and people in Louisiana, different people are running for office. Those who didn't want any disclosures are not running, and those who don't mind disclosing and showing what their finances are and what their spouse's finances are, they are running for office. So you have a different kind of people running for office. Now, that was just one integrity indicator. We're now doing it on 330 in every state, and I think over time it will have an impact. It will be important for states. States don't like to get Fs and Ds. Half
That's
the country
for sure.
Has an F and a D. And it's a simple, straightforward comparison. And it does have an impact over time. And it can be very important. So I think some of the critics have actually not really looked carefully at what we've done. And, oh, yeah, if there's any, the one in the Wall Street Journal there, did they pick any integrity indicator and look at it and say that we didn't do it accurately? No. They don't pick out even one of the 330. And we put in there not only what the reporter found, but we put in there all of the information from an independent reviewer on each one of those integrity indicators. It's all available on the website. It's all there, public integrity, State Integrity Investigation, or stateintegrity.org. It's all available. You can look it up in any one of these, and it's all transparent. So I'm, over time, this will have an impact.
One of the people quoted in your report, Bill, says, in smaller states, the culture is different. It's harder to disobey the law and go against your own moral code if everyone knows you. How much does this report take into account the local culture in smaller states?
Well, I think the example is the Dakotas, and they say, well, everybody knows everybody. Gee, there's no problems. Gee, we don't need any laws. There aren't any difficulties here. You know, I just don't buy that. I think there's nothing wrong with having transparent, accountable officials where you have to put up, you have to show what the financial disclosures are for members who are in government. I mean, it's just important that they report outside income. These are all part-time legislators. They have other jobs. Well, what are those jobs, and do they vote, to help those businesses and things? I think that's important. An independent ethics commission. This is an area where I think New Hampshire also doesn't have one. 41 states do have independent ethics commissions. The Dakotas just think, well, we don't need that. We don't have to have that. Well, I think over time, you know, maybe they don't have many problems because they're smaller states, and maybe they know everybody, and maybe everything's 100% clean. But I'm sort of, it's the trust but verify idea that, gee, maybe you ought to just let people disclose and let the public see and understand the background of their elected officials. Let them be accountable. Let it be more transparent. And, you know, they will have fewer problems over time.
You know, of all these laws that your report cites, Bill, as important to averting corruption, again, corruption risk, which one do you think is the most important that you would really be happy if you could see this put in place across the board, all 50 states?
Well, can I pick three?
If you keep it short, yes.
Okay. Well, lobbying disclosure, I think, is really important. Where the money's flowing and who it's flowing from. Ethics enforcement. And have ethics enforcement agencies. Again, something New Hampshire does not have, independent agencies. The other is public access to information. I mean, it's now, we're in a digital age. All of this stuff can be put online for every state. People can look at it. They should be able to look up all kinds of things. If you just did those three areas, it would be really important. Those are happen to be areas that New Hampshire gets an F in two of them and a D in another. But it's, you know, those are areas that I think do make a difference, because that has to do with money and information that really count. So that's part of accountability and transparency.
Bill, if you would just hold on for us. I've got three very energized and interested guests in the studio. And first up is David Hess. He's a longtime member of the state legislature. And Representative Hess, I know you had a question for Mr. Buesenberg.
Well, I have a question and a comment, Bill. When I first saw this report, I looked at the project of sponsors, the Center for Public Integrity, Global Integrity, and Public Radio International, and I had to ask myself the Paul Newman question. Who are these guys anyway? I frankly have never heard of any one of the three organizations. And then when I saw your report and description, and I'm pretty sophisticated. I'm Dartmouth graduate, Yale Law School, Kennedy School of Government. Been in the state legislature for 22 years, a lawyer for 37 years. But I was wondering, who are these people that take it upon themselves to make these evaluations? And then I read down through the list that you referred to to reporters and other people that do this. And how did you self-appoint yourself to be the experts on integrity and corruption?
Bill?
Well, I'm happy to address that. I'm sorry you haven't heard of the center. We've been around 22 years. We do investigative work. As I said, we've been looking at states for this whole time. Global Integrity was a group started by the center and spun off. They're an independent group. They look at a corruption risk index for the world. It does have an impact. It's very useful. Governments, UN, and other people help support them. Public Radio International, I'm sure you've heard their programs on the air from time to time, whether This American Life or something else that they produce. They worked with us on this. But the Center for Public Integrity helped lead this effort. We think, look, we do really serious investigative work. You don't maybe know about us, but it's being used all over the country in newspapers and on television and on public radio. Our work is being used all the time. On this one study, I now have a list of 1,100 different media organizations that have picked it up and that have used it.
Yeah, it's gotten a big reaction, positive and negative.
There have been 45 editorials using this information. You know, the fact that you haven't heard of us, I'm delighted that we can educate you about who we are and what we do. We take this work seriously. Before we did this project, I'll just say, we went around to good government groups all over the country, 40 or 50 different groups, and asked them what would be really important in accountability and transparency.
Okay,
in
Bill,
your
I'm sorry
state,
to interrupt.
In your area. And we use that information. Go ahead.
Bill, I'm sorry. In the interest of time, I just want to get our other guests in here and then invite our listeners to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Grant Bossy, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to comment on one of Bill's three priority areas where I think New Hampshire has done a lot better. And that's public access to information. About 3 years ago, my boss, Charlie Arlinghouse, asked the state to look at its checkbook and say, where are you spending your money? And 3 years ago, New Hampshire did a lousy job telling us where they actually spent the money. We see the budget where we're supposed to spend the money, but we don't actually see the line items. So over 2 years, we got all that information. We started putting it online now at nhopengov.org. And that's essentially looking at the state's online check register. We've got 3 years of data. It's a great resource. And a few months ago, the Governor Lynch, this had been a priority of his, but it never happened, said, well, if we're emailing this information to the Josiah Bartlett Center, why don't we put it online ourselves?
Right.
And now the state publishes its own checkbook. That is a huge advance in public disclosure. And I don't know. I mean, the report takes a long time, was a long time being put together. I don't know if that advance is captured in the report.
Right.
So I think maybe we've improved on that degrade since it came out.
And John Greenberg, go ahead.
Okay. So basically, Grant, picking up off of your point, I would disagree with you a little bit in that I certainly view your checkbook project as being a real contribution. I think you guys drove the bus on this, and I think that the legislature and the executive branch is beginning to deliver, and that's a good thing. However, the broader point that I would make, and where I take a slight issue in the priorities that Bill is laying out, is I think that particularly in a state such as New Hampshire is very conscious about what it spends its money on. I think that you want to set priorities. And in this area, the priority I would place is on disclosure of information in a digital format. So picking up on lobbyists and lobbying activity, picking up on financial disclosure of elected officials and top executive branch officials, picking up on truly the contracting, how the state spends its money. I would set that as a priority to make that digitally available to everybody, the whole campaign finance. That would be the priority. Second priority would be where you spend money on staff, in such as creating an ethics agency. And I just think that that reflects the realities in this state.
Well, Bill Buesenberg, final quick thoughts from you, please. And thanks again for your time.
Well, I applaud the changes that New Hampshire has made. Congratulations. That's really good. I will note that one of the highest grades you get is the state budget process, and in part because of the kinds of things you were talking about, making it available, putting it online so people can see it. So, you know, that's good. That's a great thing, and I'm delighted by that. And, you know, I hope you can address these other areas that John was talking about, for example.
All right, Bill. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That's Bill Buesenberg, again, Executive Director of the Center for Public Integrity, one of several groups involved with this report on corruption risk in state government. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Again, how do you think our state is doing in terms of the processes, procedures, laws in place to avert corruption? In what areas do you think we do show much integrity, to use the words of the report? Or where do you think we are not doing so well in this area? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And David Hess, I know, again, you've had some real issues with this report, but are there areas where you think we could do a better job?
Well, there's unquestionably areas that we can do a better job. There are unquestionably areas that anybody can do a better job, quite frankly. What I cited to you earlier about disclosure of conflicts of interest, I think we can and should educate and inform our legislators as well as senior members of the executive departments that they should disclose and be very sensitive to potential conflicts.
David, I'd like to pick up on that point because what we have right now is if you're voting, you can say, oh, I declare that I have a conflict of interest. If you're a lawmaker, right, you're voting on something. Now, but what I'd like to focus on is financial disclosure, because our financial disclosure forms are deficient in two respects, possibly three. But the two main ones are they require very little information from lawmakers and top executive branch officials. So there's very little information. And the second defect is that this is hard copy. This information is captured only in these PDF files, which makes it extremely difficult to search. So, by the way, the third defect is I think that the financial disclosure form is applied too broadly. If you're on some podunk little commission, you're required to file one just as much as if you're the governor of the state. So what I think is really important here is, and I would put it to you, do you believe that we could make headway if we had more complete financial disclosure and it would be in a kind of database digital format? Don't give me a PDF. Give me a database that can be searched.
I
agree with you on the database, and that's something I believe. I'm not a technocrat. In fact, I'm a dinosaur when it comes to tech. But I would have think the Department of State, Secretary of State's office, could transform the information they get and put it into a digital format. And I agree with you. The forms for financial disclosure are broad and generic. But we are required to disclose any sources of income of $10,000 or more, if I remember correctly, by any immediate family member. So the basis is there.
So disclosure is one thing, but being able to find that information, actually understand it and get it easily is another. And Grant Bossy, go ahead,
please. Yeah, I think the real weakness of financial disclosure in the New Hampshire House is follow-up. I mean, there is no institutional method, and there is absolutely no consequence for failure to actually file your disclosure forms or to miss something out. There's just no way to enforce that because there's 400 in the House, 24 in the Senate, all sorts of commissioners, the governor, executive counselors. There's hundreds and hundreds of these pieces of paper, and it's impossible for groups like mine with a small staff to adequately police whether these disclosure requirements are being met and whether people are declaring conflicts when they should.
Well, here's an email that I want to share with you, gentlemen. This is from Jim. He says, the big problem in New Hampshire is a political culture that isn't serious about accountability to the public and the lack of a strong independent press to shine a light on the situation. Soft corruption, which you said earlier, Grant, does occur. It's part of the closed insider approach in our state. Politicians get away with it because the state lacks a robust independent press that has the resources to investigate and hold them publicly accountable. Wow, lots of great points there, Jim. I want to ask John how he feels. David Hess, go ahead, John.
Real quickly, get it digital. Digital means you've got an online form just like you're making an online purchase. You dump your information in if you're a lobbyist or a lawmaker and so forth. It goes into a database available to the public, which would allow news organizations to more rapidly get that information as well as any government agency that's interested in investigating.
Well, I'm not sure if that gets to Jim's question, though.
No. If the information is in a digital format, then in fact, it's easier to have an independent press do its job.
Break time, and we'll be right back.
Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday, doesn't shy away from the big questions.
So does America need to produce more scientists and engineers?
Okay, let's talk about signs of an early spring, that we humans have more in common with gorillas than we think.
And where does the dark energy live?
I'm Brady Carlson. Join me as I sit down with Ira to discuss scientific questions of all kinds. We'll be at UNH Durham on May 1st. For tickets and information, visit nhpr.org.
This event sponsored in part by NEBCO and the University of New Hampshire.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Granite State Human Resource Conference, Tuesday, May 1st at the Center of New Hampshire in Manchester. Information and registration online at gshrconference.org. And from Milne Travel and American Express Vacations, with nearly 100 local travel professionals serving New Hampshire's business and vacation travelers since 1975. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a new report measures what it calls integrity in state government by looking at laws, policies, and practices in place that it says can prevent corruption. No state did especially well. The Grant State got a D. Join us with your questions and comments. Call in 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, just before the break, we were talking about an email from Jim, who said that one of the problems is New Hampshire lacks what he called a strong independent press to shine a light on what he called soft corruption. We were talking about that before the break. I did want to get your thoughts on that. Now, John, real quick, What about this idea that New Hampshire lacks a strong independent press? Certainly we have seen the media here in New Hampshire shrink.
Well, I think, sure. I mean, newspapers have been under the gun and staffs have been reduced and so forth. I don't think that makes them less independent. And the point I was making right before the break is that if the state provides information in a clear, digitally available, database-driven format, which is easily done with off-the-shelf technology right now, then that makes the job of reporters and everybody, Grant, absolutely, and anyone who's interested, much, much, much easier. And that's where you begin to get the dividends from transparency.
What do you think, David Hess? Our emailer, Jim, is saying, look, we've got a political culture that isn't serious about accountability.
I think it's directly the opposite. If you ask any state legislator, are you accountable to your constituencies, they're going to say absolutely because they're my neighbors. I see them in the store. I see them at the post office every day. I hear from them. They call me. They know what my phone number is. They know what my street address is. So I think that's going down the wrong street. With respect to the issue of media watchdogs, et cetera, I think our press is very strong given the size of the state. You have Kevin Landrigan. You had Tom Fahey, now Gary Reyno, you have the AP, you have the editorial boards of 10 news, daily newspapers that watch us pretty closely. But I also think, to get back to what John said, we have seen the power of the social media in the presidential primary this year like never before. That's another watchdog. People are becoming their own watchdogs with blogging, et cetera.
All right. And joining us now on the phone is someone else who's been watching this report very closely. Martin Gross, chairman of the Legislative Ethics Committee, which administers and enforces the state's legislature's ethical standards. He's also an attorney in Concord. And Martin, good morning. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Laura. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. Thanks. You take real issue with this report, Martin, and without getting into too much detail, just give us your broad thoughts on why.
Well, I won't say real issue with the report. I'd say real issue with some of the report. From my little keyhole viewpoint, I looked at the answers to questions that were put about my particular area of activity, and I found the responses were just wrong.
Legislative ethics, then, is your area of activity.
Yes, ethics enforcement. And I counted 8 absolutely wrong answers out of 15 on the subject. And I say to myself, what's the matter with the rest of this report?
So wrong in terms of what, Martin? Like wrong in terms of opinion or just wrong? You just got that 100% wrong.
Let me give you, I know you don't want detail on this program, but I can give you the actual numbers of the answers that, in my estimation, give us a 0%, and it's absolutely wrong. They say, in practice, our members of the agency or set of agencies tasked with enforcing state ethics rules protected from political interference. We get a 0% on that, and that's just wrong. For example, members of my committee are protected from political interference because once appointed, they cannot be removed for the duration of the legislative session.
So the report says, and Martin, I just want to interrupt you, and I'm sorry to do that, just to totally clarify, because this is, you know, new information for a lot of listeners. So the report says members of your agency, which oversees legislative ethics, aren't protected from political influence. You say, yes, indeed, we are.
Yes, indeed, we are.
So
and
what else?
There's a lot. What else? Okay, I'll go on. 289, in practice, the agency or set of agencies tasked with enforcing state ethics rules imposes penalties on offenders. We get a 0% on that. And that's wrong. What my committee does is hold hearings on complaints and come to conclusions on them, and we report our recommendations to the body of which the member belongs, and it becomes, it's public, contrary to what Grant Bozzi has said on your program. Our processes are completely public after the initial phase of determining whether a complaint has merit. So that's wrong. Another one, 290, in practice, the agency or set of agencies tasked with enforcing state ethics rules proposes the creation of relevant laws or regulations to bolster its mission. Again, we get a 0%.
Let me ask you this, Martin, if I could. You know, in our citizen legislature, Lawmakers are paid $100 a year. So as David Hess said earlier, many have to work other jobs. Understandable when you're only making $100 as a lawmaker. But it does raise eyebrows about this idea that Grant Bossy mentioned, soft corruption, when a lawmaker who works in a particular industry crafts and promotes legislation that supports that particular industry. You know, what do you think, Martin? I mean, is that a form of corruption or risk of corruption?
Oh, well, I suppose my dear late mother-in-law, who was a member of the state legislature, talked about soft corruption. She said, if you bought somebody strawberries, he voted with you. you know, it's New Hampshire. There are a lot of relationships here. They're cozy, but to put them up in headlines and saying that's what runs the state, I think, is, again, wrong. The way our state addresses that kind of coziness is to have many people deciding. You got a contract, for example. The governor doesn't award contracts in this state. It's got to get three votes out of a five-member executive council. The theory has always been dispersion of power somehow protects from cozy relationships. That may or may not be right, but that's the theory.
Okay.
I think our problem here is that our means of access to information is limited. I think that the spirit has been willing, but the flesh has turned out to be weak. For example, in my particular department, again, to correct something Grant Bossy said, you can get access online on our website to every disclosure form that every legislator has filed.
All right, Martin, in the interest of time, I'm so sorry. I have to let you go, but I really appreciate you joining us. And I'm going to talk with our guests about this dispersion of power helps avoid corruption here in New Hampshire. And thank you, Martin. Yeah, you know what, Representative Hess, I think I have to let him go because we've got callers and so forth who want to join us. Grant, real quickly, I'm interested in this thought that power is dispersed here in New Hampshire. The governor's weak. We've got this giant legislature. We've got this weird executive council that no other state has. What about that point that Martin makes? That helps avoid corruption.
I think the structure of our government prevents a lot of corruption from happening. The fact that we've got 400 reps making $100 a year, and the worst thing you can do to them is take away their parking space. They're not dependent on this. They don't need leadership to help them in their reelection fight because, you know, all they lose is a job that pays them $100 a year for thousands of hours of work. So there's not a lot you can really hold over the head of a state rep to get them their vote their way. The problem with the New Hampshire Legislative Ethics Committee is it is at one extreme in terms of disclosure, and that
this is the committee that Martin heads.
Yeah, you have to have personal firsthand in the room. I saw somebody taking a bribe knowledge to even file a complaint. You cannot tell anybody that you filed a complaint. If you tell somebody that you filed a complaint with the ethics committee, that's grounds for dismissal. You can't know anything about what's going on until they've pumped it up to the legislature. And if they decide there's nothing that wrong there, you can't get access to any of the information. And they have been remarkably forgiving of some very questionable actions from state representatives in recent years. And the attorney general has no authority to do anything because they say, well, you didn't violate the law. You only maybe violated legislative rules. Therefore, the attorney general can't prosecute it. We'll give it to the ethics committee, which is a very flawed system.
All right.
Not Martin's fault. That's just the way the law is written.
To our callers, and Seth has been waiting in Canterbury. Hi, Seth. You're on the air. Welcome. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, Laura. It's Representative Seth Coe from Canterbury. And I will tell you that I agree with actually all of your guests. John, I filed legislation to do the exact kind of disclosures. It was a bipartisan bill. And guess who spoke against it? Secretary of State. We have a problem. We need to put stuff online. I agree with you. I did get a bill through. The governor signed it. HB 418 says to every single state agency, you have to start putting stuff online. You have to start disclosing information. You have to do databases, not PDFs. We're moving in that direction. It's been a huge thing I've been working on. But I agree with everything I've heard so far today. There is a problem, but we're working on it.
So there have been some recent laws passed, Representative Cohn,
that
have helped.
418 was only signed at the beginning of March by the governor, and the Department of Information Technology has been put in charge of making sure every other agency starts to put information online. And it's a big process. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take years. But we started steering that ship, in the right direction of transparency, of public data. We signed a first-in-the-nation open data bill. We are setting the path on this. I guarantee you that report, I agree with Martin Gross, is wrong. We did not earn a D. We're far better than that. I guarantee you next year we will get an A.
Well, that's interesting. And, you know, I have heard others say, look, we're making progress, John.
Yeah. And Seth's point, I think, actually, if you were going to really say pragmatically, what you need to do is you need to have more people in various state agencies who are comfortable with technology. We live in a database-driven world, and we need more people that are familiar with this so that they don't see all the hurdles, they see the opportunities.
Let's take another call. Thank you for that one. And Michael is up from Bristol. Hi, Michael. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to comment that, in agreement with your guest, that while headline-making corruption might not happen in New Hampshire, I think that soft corruption permeates all of rural New Hampshire, and sort of an old boys network mentality of favorability is just part of the way of life. And I was hoping that he can maybe come up with some suggestions of how people could sort of not change it with laws, but change the culture of favorable treatment of some municipalities and negative vilification of others.
What do you mean by that, Michael? Favorable some municipalities and negative of others?
I just got out of our town meeting a few weeks ago, and we're having some severe budget problems in Bristol, New Hampshire, like many towns are.
Yeah.
And we saw the aggressive attacks toward the school board forcing them to cut massive amounts of their budget, $2 million out of $22 million, while, in many's opinion, inflated police and fire department weren't asked to cut anything at all.
Mm.
They were defended strongly by selectmen who have had ties to these policemen and firemen for a very long time. And many people in town are like, how can you ask the school to cut so much and cut so little on your own?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead, David Hess.
You had a town meeting. A town meeting is direct democracy. The people get to vote. This is basically the only state in the country where you can do that. You don't have a disagreement with a decision as it was being made. You have a difference of opinion as to whether that was the right decision, but you had your choice and your opportunity in town meeting, and you couldn't persuade the rest of your fellow citizens to agree with you. So you lost.
But are you saying that there's no sort of cozy relationship between selectmen and the chief of the firefighters?
Well, there can be and there can't be. In Hooksett, for example, we had a head-to-head clash between the chief of police and the town council for 5 years. Yes, there is an old boy network. But again, I wouldn't call old boy networks corruption. I think that is a gross distortion of the word corruption, and it misrepresents what this gentleman is concerned about.
Just quick point here. I just think that Norman Rockwell versions of, like, small is beautiful really have to be thrown out the window. Local control works when residents and citizens act and get involved. And I would echo David's point here that it is true. In many small municipalities, there are these small circles of people, but it's up to voters to vote the bums out and get things on a better path.
And Grant, our accountability is every year or every 2 years throughout the state.
Yeah. Local transparency is a quagmire in New Hampshire. Some towns do it well. Other towns go into non-public session all the time when they're not supposed to. There's a very limited set of reasons to go into non-public session. Employee relations, if somebody gets fired, there is remarkably little insight into why they got fired. Maybe they broke the law. Maybe they cut a deal. I mean, people are in my hometown of Hillsborough, the school board is giving hundreds and thousands of dollars out to people, and we don't know why. So there are huge gaps in the public's access to information at the local level. They're not quite as bad at the state level. I think we're improving a lot at the state level in terms of getting that information out. And yeah, just having a document isn't enough anymore. We need to have a database. We need to have an ability to sort, to sift through this information, these 400 pieces of paper, to find something. And we need actual people that aren't me looking through this and policing it and saying, Representative, you haven't gotten your conflict of interest form in. You haven't gotten your financial disclosure form in. There needs to be some consequence for failure to comply with state law.
Who should that be, Grant?
There is a consequence for not filing your financial statement on time. It's a misdemeanor, I believe.
And who's the last one that got charged?
Well, we have one member of the staff has been routinely, and for the last 5 years, going around to legislators and saying, get your report in by January 31, or you could be subject to charge.
Gentlemen, I have one last question. We have just about a minute left. What do you think, John, if this report were to be done next year, would New Hampshire do a little better than a D, given some of the changes that we've talked about this hour?
Yeah, I think it would bump up. I think part of the question is how quickly the state acts. I mean, I'm delighted to hear from Seth that there is this move afoot. And the question is just how fast you move.
What do you think, Grant?
I think we're doing better in some areas. We haven't addressed a lot of other areas. And I want to point out the one A that we got on the report was for internal auditing. We do a good job of it, auditing state agencies and getting that information to the legislature through the fiscal committee. They get audits every month at every meeting of various state agencies. The audits contain a ton of information. The bond statements that the treasurer's office put out a ton of information. Former Governor John Sununu likes to say that if politicians lie, they get reelected. If they lie on a bond statement, they go to jail.
David Hess, short thoughts
for me,
please.
Shouldn't have gotten a D in the first place. I think the ratings are highly suspect in, on superficial grounds, and I wouldn't even comment about where we stand. But I think if we're in the same company as North and South Dakota, we're in damn good company.
All right. Well, David Hess, thank you for being here. I appreciate it. That's Representative David Hess, longtime Republican representative from Hooksett. Grant Bossy, good to see you. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Grant Bossy, investigative reporter at the Josiah Bartlett Center for Public Policy. And John Greenberg, thank you for your time as well.
Well, you're quite welcome.
John Greenberg, former executive editor at NHPR. He helped conduct research for the state integrity investigation. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Ryan Lassard. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.